The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Music want to make you just get up and dance? It does me. I hope you like it. It's from our friend J.P. Taylor, who is a fabulous teacher, environmental educator, and musician. He's got a fabulous CD. It's called The Last Frontier, I believe, and check him out online. We Can Turn It Around is just one of my favorite green songs of his, or at least with a green message. Welcome to today's edition of The Green Front, where although the glaciers are melting and the oil is still gushing into Gulf waters and washing up on the shores, there is some good news on the Green Front, on a couple of fronts, actually. First, on the energy front, a victory for the people of California. Yay! Narrowly passing with the defeat of Proposition 16, seen to be a power grab by the nation's largest utility, PG&E. And on another front, we are watching what's happening with plastic bags being banned in California and in communities around the state. And we're going to find out about a victory on that front as well. And if you're thinking, well, I don't live in California, why should I care about those stories? We here in the Golden Green State like to think that as we go, so goes the rest of the nation in terms of environmental trend setting. We wish we were not the first in many cases, and we're not always. Certainly Washington, Oregon, Wisconsin, a couple of other very green, proactive states. But a lot of legislation does begin here. A lot of programs like curbside composting began in San Francisco and is now spreading to communities throughout the Bay Area. And let's face it, we do have a lot of activist groups and activists based here. So we're hoping to share what's going on here to inspire you if you're listening around the rest of the country or perhaps around the world, since this is the World Wide Web, to do what you can in your communities once we demonstrate what's possible, and not without a fight on both battles, fronts, on both fronts, I should say. To begin, we're going to welcome Bill McGovern to the Green Front. He is the director of the Sierra Club in California, and, of course, they are celebrating the defeat of Prop 16, again seen as a power grab and a real victory for clean energy, democracy, and the little guy, because when it comes to how much money was spent, well, it's no contest. Welcome to the Green Front, Bill.
Thanks. Good morning.
It is a good morning. I went to sleep last night, and it was too close to call, Proposition 16, and woke up to the good news that it just barely passed. And that's a huge victory, considering that the opponents of Prop 16, I understand, raised just a little over $100,000 and some change, where PG&E, probably spending some of our money, poured about $46 million into this campaign.
Yeah, it's really an amazing victory. I mean, that means that they outspent us by more than 500-1. And
wow.
Almost all of that money came from PG&E. Their only other contribution was from the California Chamber of Commerce, which is a very retrograde organization. And the opposition was a feisty ragtag band of public interest groups, like Sierra Club California, like the Utility Reform Network, others who support the consumer and environmental movement and want to preserve both our democracy and the ability for communities to have a choice of buying cleaner energy. And a lot of people who didn't even care that much about the energy issue were really taken aback by the fact that what you had here was a huge corporation trying to buy, through California's constitution, a way to lock out its competition. And PG&E put this on the ballot themselves, spent millions of dollars, lied to people about what it was about. So it really does kind of vindicate our faith in the voters of California that they saw through all the very expensive deceptions.
And we'll get to that and some of their tactics in just a moment. But just take a moment and explain exactly what that would have done to the state constitution. What they were trying to do and what they were trying to reverse, which was actually something that had been put in place, I think, to prevent this very kind of power grab.
Right. What PG&E was trying to do was to prevent people from banding together through their local governments, either to completely set up a public power system and move the private utility out of business, or to exercise something that's called community choice, which is under a California law which allows for local governments to decide that they will be in charge of the decisions on what electricity to buy. The utility will still own the physical plant, but the local government, and Marin County is already doing this, can then decide that it's going to buy mostly clean energy and make that decision instead of having the private utility like PG&E make the decision. Then the individual customers can opt out of that community choice system if they want to, but it does give people a choice. So what PG&E was trying to do was to set up a requirement that before any entity could set up that kind of a system, there would have to be a two-thirds vote by the people in the area. So you could have a minority of 34% of the voters blocking something that 66% of the voters wanted to have. So it would be very anti-democratic with a small d, and yet PG&E told people this was about the taxpayers' right to vote, trying to do was set up something that would have had minority ruling over the majority.
I think that's what got so many people so angry. It was just so overtly misleading, and Right to Vote Act. I mean, can't get much farther from the reality that this was aimed at.
Yeah, it was actually a corporate monopoly trying to lock in its monopoly against any competition. And I live, for example, in Sacramento, where we have the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which has much lower rates than PG&E, better customer service, and more renewable energy. So fortunately, the people of Sacramento a long time ago decided to set up this district, carving it out of PG&E's territory, and PG&E was trying to prevent anything like that from ever happening again.
And SMUD has, I think, one of the largest investments in solar power, doesn't it? Or at least early on it was one of the first.
Yes, SMUD has been a leader in solar and wind power and also in energy efficiency.
Now, I've been covering the Green Beat since 1997, going back to last century, Bill. And so I remember interviewing someone who, I can't remember his name anymore, but he was at PG&E. He left because he was trying to get PG&E on the solar photovoltaic bandwagon, and they were trying to sabotage that. And he not only got angry about that and left, but talked about it. And so when PG&E really started reinventing itself, recycling its image as the greenest utility in the land, many of us were pleased to see that. And, maybe too little too late, but they are large. And when the big elephant in the room, moves one direction, that can only be good things. It's sort of like, Walmart going green. And yet, this initiative has really changed their stripes. I mean, many people no longer see them as truly a green utility. How do you interpret the kind of bipolar stance and imaging on the part of PG&E?
Well, I think this measure has stripped the green veneer off of PG&E. It was so brazen that they couldn't even get the other big investor-owned utilities in California to join them. Southern California Edison and Sempra in the San Diego area stayed out, and their silence was deafening. What was also very interesting was that this election was really decided in PG&E's service territory. They actually won a yes vote in the parts of the state where they don't provide the electricity, Southern California. But in the areas where people really know PG&E because they provide their electricity or their gas, the measure went down to defeat badly, and that's what ended up carrying the no vote, which right now stands at about 52.5%. So PG&E has handed itself a huge black eye with this.
And just talk a little bit about the opposition. Every time PG&E ran an ad, which was so frequent, or was sending out these mailers that were just clearly a power grab and very offensive to those of us who knew what was really at stake here. my husband would say, why doesn't the opposition, you know, get out there? I said, what do you think? You know, they've gotten no money. And yet, you know, the message got through with this sort of, as you say, feisty band of underfunded public interest groups.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it really helps to have the truth and the good arguments on your side. I have never seen an election in which the newspaper editorial endorsements were so one-sided. We carried every single major newspaper in the state, except for, I think, the Orange County Register, which is so right-wing that I think, you know, they just had to go with big business. But some of the big papers like the Sacramento Bee and the Los Angeles Times editorialized more than once about how brazen this was. And people saw it as not only an attack on clean energy, but really an attack on democracy. If one big corporation can buy its own constitutional protection against competition by spending almost $50 million, then we would see other big corporations trying the same thing. And it represents a complete corruption of the initiative process, which was initially put into place in California as part of the progressive movement to take on the power of the big corporations. So people were very upset about that, and our campaign was growing out of that anger at the grassroots. So people talked to their neighbors. People sent viral emails. There was a little bit in terms of YouTube videos, the kind of low-cost campaigning that you can do in the new media age, and people were able to spread the word that way, and it's really refreshing to actually have a grassroots victory against the big money.
I call that in viral spread.
I like
message.
That.
Thank you. You heard it here first. So I probably won't get paid for that. I am paying up the nose like everybody to PG&E, and we're a pretty energy-efficient household. Is there any assurance that some of what we have to pay each month, although we did sign up for, we live in Marin County, so we are community choice aggregators now supporting that. We are deep green, but still our bills are high, and they're coming from PG&E. How do we know that some of that $46 million did not come out of what they're charging us, or that they will not charge us a surcharge now to try to make up for this ill-conceived expenditure on their part?
Well, the $46 million did come out of what PG&E's customers are paying. I mean, that's how a utility makes money. Their money comes from the utility bills that their customers pay. Now, they will tell you, well, this wasn't ratepayer money, this was shareholder money, because they took it out of the profits that they are allowed to make. And so technically they went to their shareholders and actually said, profits will be down because we're spending all this money on this initiative. But it still is money that came out of people's utility bills. So it's outrageous that your utility was spending your money to try to rip you off. And to make matters worse, the public power entities that would have been hurt the worst by this, they were not able to spend their customers' money. They are not allowed to spend their customers' money on any electoral campaigns. So that was one of the reasons for the huge imbalance in the spending.
So, and to add injury, it came during the winter months when many people like ourselves, our bills go up just because we have, you know, we don't do air conditioning here in the Bay Area, but we do need heat, when especially it was a pretty cold and rainy winter and spring. So our bills were higher than they've ever been. And then to think that some of that was going to fund this, it's pretty outrageous. And just the attempt to be a monopoly, that's very, you know, it's really outrageous.
Right. I mean, what you have here is a regulated utility that's allowed to make a certain amount of profit by the government and tries to lock in its monopoly over its customers, not give its customers any choice, and then use the customers' money to lie to them and get them to vote for this. It really is one of the sleaziest campaigns that we've seen, and it's just really a great day to see it go down.
I wonder if, I mean, it won't be as bad as BP's green image going down the drain, but can PG&E really continue to market itself as the greenest utility in the land, do you think, after this? Do you think people really made those connections, the public?
Well, I think it was a really resounding defeat that came from their own service territory. So I think their own customers have really rejected the idea that their utility is any kind of a good citizen. And I do think that will have ramifications for the utility. I mean, they published lists of their so-called supporters, and a number of them were just front groups that didn't really represent anybody. Others were groups that PG&E has given a lot of money to. So they really just tried to buy their way into people's hearts. And, you know, they came close, but ultimately fell short.
I guess they didn't give me enough. They, full disclosure here, they gave me a $5,000 show of support sponsorship when my program on Air America was floundering and mostly self-funded, and I did appreciate that, and I do, and I'll say that. But I don't appreciate what they're doing now, and it's not, that wasn't enough to you know, gag me.
Right, and some of the causes that they funded are good causes. I know groups that have taken money from PG&E. The Sierra Club is not one of them, but I know groups that have, and I respect those groups that still came out against the initiative.
Mm-hmm. That's the point, yes. So what does this mean for efforts in the community level for local power aggregation? Is this going to really open the door for more efforts like what we've seen succeed in Marin so far?
Yeah, it won't make it easy, but it does keep the door open and make it possible. I think San Francisco is going to go next and have their energy choice system, and I think that other communities will take a close look at it, especially if it succeeds in Marin and San Francisco. But PG&E will still be fighting those efforts at the local level. What they essentially banked on with this initiative was to just have the fight once and put all their bets on that and try to get their monopoly put into the Constitution. They lost that, but I'm sure that they will still continue to fight tooth and nail at the local level. So it's going to mean that communities are going to have to work hard to give their people a choice when it comes to affordable green energy.
Now, this battle is unfolding, has unfolded, you know, with the backdrop of the continuing oil kill, can't call it a spill, in the Gulf, and I think you mentioned earlier that it's now available in high-definition TV, so you can see it in all its blazing colors, the oil spewing into the Gulf waters.
And what this...
Never more than now have we, you know, if you didn't want to before, had to focus on where does our, you know, energy come from. You know, not only oil, but coal. We've almost forgotten about the tragedy, that coal mine explosion that happened in April. Or late March, where 24 people lost their lives. And that was starting to get people's attention and really starting to look at, gee, might I be, you know, part of the problem if I'm leaving my electricity on when I don't need to, or at least that's what, you know, many of us are trying to make those connections, connect the dots. And then this. This has got to be, you know, truly a pivotal event in our ecological psyche.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, this disaster in the Gulf is a wake-up call to America that we do need to reduce our reliance on dirty fossil fuels. We need to move away from oil, away from coal. We need to find ways to move ourselves around through transportation and to get the power that we need for our homes and industry without doing this kind of damage to our people and our environment. And we have solutions with renewable energy. We have electric vehicles now ready to hit the market, and we need to muster the political will to move those solutions forward and to defeat the entrenched interests of the fossil fuel lobby, which certainly has the money, but they're showing America now the kind of damage that they do to us.
Yeah, and what would you like to see happen, given that people are finally, I mean, mainstream Americans, the public, mainstream media, finally focused on the cost, the true cost, the uglier side of our dependence on fossil fuels? Best case scenario, what does this event do? What's the silver lining in the very dark cloud that's possible?
Well, we do need to focus not just on the mechanics of what went wrong in the Gulf, but the whole culture of corruption and lax oversight that allowed BP to get away with such a shoddy operation, which ended in this disaster. We need to have cops on the beat, not think that companies can regulate themselves. And we need to move rapidly to clean energy and not just think, well, we can do offshore oil drilling, but we can do it better than BP. We need to get away from offshore oil drilling entirely and eventually to get off oil and coal. We can't do that overnight, but we have to do it, and we need to muster the kind of urgency that led us, for example, to put a man on the moon in less than 10 years. We need to put that kind of skill and commitment and resources behind the effort to move us off of dirty fossil fuels.
Now, aside from Rush Limbaugh's absurd assertion that it's, the Sierra Club and the like, environmental activists that are responsible for this because, either that eco-terrorists exploded the rig or that it's environmentalists that, forced it to be so far offshore, so, deep that they've had these problems, what do you say to the second allegation? We won't even let the first one have any merit.
Well, of course, the opposite is true. It's environmentalists who have been warning about the dangers of offshore oil drilling. The companies weren't driven to deep water drilling by environmentalists. They were driven there by their own greed and by the lax oversight of elected and appointed officials who were willing to let them drill there.
So it's not that people along the coast are saying, don't obstruct my view or get this, away from the coast because it'll be safer. There's no merit to that environmentalists really push that. That's what I've been hearing a lot, and I reject it too, but I want to hear some of your arguing points.
No, there's no merit to that at all. We have for a long time pointed to the dangers of offshore oil drilling here in California. We had the blowout in Santa Barbara in 1969. And instead, you had the drill baby drill crowd that wanted to, drill here, drill now. I mean, all these senseless slogans, and we still have some politicians and candidates still spouting that in spite of the horrible disaster in the Gulf. So what we have supported is energy solutions that are cleaner, safer, and less expensive than fossil fuels.
And do you think this catastrophe bill will at least move some Americans to be a little bit more open-minded about, quote, the environmentalist agenda? I mean, it's always, puzzled me how people, even if it's not in their interest, will just sort of side with the corporate or, in this case, the oil industry's lines, that we need this. This is clean coal. We have this under control. Technology will solve the problems or at least get us out of a jam. Clearly, that is so plainly not true. This being a really graphic example of that. Do you think people will start to see maybe environmentalists are actually working for our cause, which is protecting our natural resources and not using up, at a great cost every drop of fossil fuels and engaging in so much fossil fuelishness?
Well, I think this disaster does seem to be changing a lot of people's minds. For example, I'm sure they wouldn't admit that it's changed their minds, but you've got the conservative Republican governors of Louisiana and Mississippi who were completely against government being involved in just about anything, now asking for a government takeover of the cleanup operation in the Gulf.
So, yes.
they seem to have really changed their positions there. And I think that, people in this country do want cleaner air, cleaner water, and open spaces where we can go and enjoy nature. So I think the American people are on our side. The problem is that we're up against the big money interests who have had too much of a hold on politics.
So maybe the tide is turning, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I think particularly if you look at the younger people, I see a really higher environmental consciousness in my children and young people that I meet. And so I think that gives us some hope.
That's great. And I'll take this moment to just do a little plug, speaking of turning the tide. I don't know if you've heard, Oprah Winfrey is looking for a new talk show host for her new network. And I have just spent the last few days in the editing booth doing a three-minute audition, which I've uploaded on the Oprah.com site. So if anyone would like to see the nation's first green talk show on television, not just radio, please vote for, it's called Let's Turn the Tide. Betsy Rosenberg would be the host. Got to get that in because it's not about me. It's about the cause we're talking about, all of us, our children, having a cleaner, greener future. And I think as people, more people connect the dots and understand the consequences of our doing business as usual and see the need to really transition to a cleaner energy future. You know, we can't fight for and protect what we don't understand. And I think a place where there could be one-stop shopping that would reach mainstream Americans with, you know, what's possible and what's being done. There are as many solutions and alternatives and green programs and products and people out there as there are challenges. And the challenges are huge, let's face it. So my thing has been, you know, let's have one green talk show, radio or or television. So forgive the plug, but again, it's for the greater good. If you think we need this kind of program out there, you know, that would really reach the Oprah crowd, please vote for Let's Turn the Tide. And I really appreciate your being with us, Bill. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I'll just put in a little plug for ways to get further information about what we're doing. You can go to www.sierraclubcalifornia.org.
That's great. And as usual, Sierra Club is doing a fabulous job, and I hope your numbers are still growing. I know that they were going up last time I checked, and that's a good sign. And also, maybe just in the last 2 minutes we have together, thoughts on this very important climate change legislation hanging in the balance.
Well, we do need to take action at the federal level to limit greenhouse gas emissions, and we need to have stronger legislation than what is currently proposed in Congress. There should be a bill that increases clean energy, renewable energy, and energy efficiency without giveaways to the nuclear, coal, and oil lobbies. So we do urge people to contact your members of Congress and ask for a real clean energy bill.
How optimistic are you that we're going to get one soon?
Soon is hard,
hard to
say.
Yeah.
When we're talking about the U.S. Senate, I wouldn't make any predictions about soon.
And yet,
but I know that a lot of people are working very hard to get it through the Senate.
And hopefully it will not get so watered down that it will, you know, it will not be effective.
Right. We don't have time to waste, and we don't have money to waste on boondoggles like nuclear, coal, and oil.
And there's been talk about whether this oil disaster is going to help or hurt the climate change bill efforts. Any thoughts on that, or is that also too politically complicated to predict?
Well, I think that President Obama has accurately said that the oil disaster in the Gulf really underscores the need for moving clean energy legislation.
Yeah, and he seems to be coming out stronger. Maybe this is, if nothing else, and this is a hell of a cost, it's given him more, put more fuel in his fire, given him, I think, a little bit more support, or at least as he perceives it, to be a little bolder on climate legislation.
Well, we definitely need the president's leadership on this, absolutely.
We do. Well, thank you for your leadership, Bill, in California and with the Sierra Club. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
We've been speaking with Bill McGavern. He's the director of the Sierra Club in California. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will be speaking with Brian Early. He's with Californians Against Waste. Going to have some other positive news on the environmental front, what's happening with an effort to ban those pesky plastic bags that are, you know, in our lives for a matter of minutes often, and then out there in the universe, in the ecosphere for eternity. We'll be right back. I'm Betsy Rosenberg.